You can start the tape, and my name is Billy Fiatom. It's a name that if you see it, you'll say it in a variety of different ways, but it's, it has many letters tossed in, and it's Fiatom. Pretty simple once you learn it. And the session today is Stories to Live By, and the story we're going to read today is The Gold Key in the Mahogany Box. Last week, I did a series on journeying inward, and we used a variety of imaging and rock meditation and doing a story on the chambered nautilus and some other things that helped us kind of focus in and be more present to the journey inward. And today we're going to do, this week we're going to do something similar, only use stories to journey inward. And stories to live by, and I'm going to be using a book by an acquaintance of mine by the name of Vara Kamin. Vara Kamin. She actually lives in the Minneapolis area.
And
K-A-M-I-N, and I didn't get this ordered through the bookstore, but it's called The Gold Key in the Mahogany Box. It's one of the stories in the selection. And other fables. It's a grouping of fables that she has written and that she uses as a way of discovering more about who we are and more about the world we live in. I'm increasingly fascinated with stories. I guess from the time one is a child, we read stories and are interested in stories. But as I get older, I become even more interested in them. I was recently on a, spent a week in South Dakota with a group of 12 women that learned more about Native American spirituality and listened to some of the stories of Native Americans, which was a very interesting experience for me. The oral tradition has been something that has been used by many different cultures to continue their traditions and their meanings, their values of their cultures. We use stories in my profession. Some of you I know are in the counseling profession as well. Using stories to allow the client to come find themselves within the story and find some meaning within the story. Also, stories are important in my listening to people who come in for counseling. The story is very important to me, the person's story that they bring, to establish some kind of a context for that person, who they are and what their experiences have been, and what resources and strengths they have to draw on for working through some of the issues that they bring in. So the story is very important. The Bible has a lot of stories. It's full of stories. And if you were at Bible study this morning, you heard more about that. And Holden is all about stories, too. There are conversations around every corner here. You have to find time to be by yourself because there's so many rich and wonderful stories that people bring to this place. And in talking with each other, we discover more about each other's stories. So we discover more about who we are, and that enriches the lives of each one of us to discover that. So stories have been around for a long time and have been an essential part of the human experience. They help to define who we are and where we're going, and they enable us to make sense of our world that often seems senseless and random. The meaning of a particular story, Vara Kamin tells us, of course, is not always immediately obvious, nor should it be. Each person who reads or listens to a story brings to that experience his or her own emotions and understanding. So the story is going to be different for each one of us. And it's going to be filtered through the screen of our own hopes and fears and desires. But good stories use universal symbols and the images to relate their messages. So it helps us draw some of the inspiration from them. And Varakamin has used the fable, as it's one of the oldest forms of storytelling. It goes back, I think, to the Egyptian time, about 1500 BC. And the fables in this collection share something in common with fairy tales, with the traditional fairy tales, where the message is more elusive. So you're going to have to interpret the story. You're going to have to glean some personal message and then put it into some kind of action. So the fables here, the concerns are both timeless and they're topical. So as you listen to the story when I read it today, you'll have to find what message there is for you. And that's going to be different for each of you. Stories can help us transcend our differences and unite us both spiritually and emotionally. So how you respond to this fable today will depend on you, whether it becomes a means of self-reflection, a starting point for change, or just a source of pleasure. So what we're going to do today, I'm going to read you a story, The Gold Key in the Mahogany Box, and then we will quietly respond to that in our own individual way by doing some writing about what kind of images, what this evokes for us, what it connects for us in our lives. Maybe there's some new things that happen that you make connections that you hadn't thought of before. Some people prefer to draw rather than write in words. So if you want to do some drawing with images, or if you feel moved to do that, feel free to do that too. And then after we've taken some time to do that, we'll have some sharing time, and if anybody wants to do some sharing of what that was like, we will have time for it at the end. First of all, though, I would like us to kind of come into this space and leave the rest of the day and the afternoon out there, and maybe do a little centering before we begin to listen to the story. And we'll do that by getting comfortable in our chairs. Yes.
Can I pull that blind down? I find that distracting.
Sure.
My eyes want to go to every person that walks by.
Anybody else distracted by anything? They want to change the world. Anything else you need to make yourself comfortable? Please speak up. And if you'll just close your eyes after you've made yourself comfortable in your chairs, and just quietly begin to focus on your breathing. Taking some deep breaths, breathing in that wonderful oxygen that goes to all the different parts of our body, and breathing out the tension and whatever is there that you may need to let go of. And just focus on the breath, that life force that keeps us connected to all the parts of ourselves and to the universe in which we live. And slowly take some deep, deep breaths and focus on the breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Gently and slowly, focusing on the breathing. Feeling more relaxed and feeling centered in this place, in this time, and when you are ready, open your eyes and be present in this space. The gold key in the mahogany box. Once upon a time, long, long ago, there were seven souls who lived in a cave. One soul was from the mountains, another from the sea. Three souls grew from flowers and the trees. And the last two souls came from the stars that shone in the sky. The seven souls had traveled far and wide looking for a buried treasure. But before they could find what they were looking for, they got lost along the way. Through the ages, many had perished in pursuit of the buried treasure. Yet it was the endless search of all the seekers that kept the earth alive from one civilization to the next. In search of the buried treasure, each of the seven souls took a separate path. While the soul from the mountains traversed the rocky terrain, the soul from the sea and the three from the flowers and the trees came upon their paths quite unexpectedly. And when the souls from the stars found themselves in a darkened cave, they weren't quite sure how they fell from the sky. At first, the mouth of the cave couldn't be seen. Surrounded by weeds of envy and anger and greed, the cave seemed to be at the end of the trail. Yet unknown to the seven souls, the cave was the doorway that led to the new world. Thirsty from travel, the soul from the mountain, who had the head of a donkey and the body of an ox, went in to search for a drink to quench his thirst. When the donkey ox came upon a pool of melted ice, he found the soul from the sea resting quietly. Curling inside itself, the soul from the sea, who had the head of a turtle and the body of a snail, tried to hide from the donkey ox, but the mountain soul was too smart to let the moving rock out of its sight. In a far corner of the cave, where hope blossomed next to despair, the souls from the flowers and the trees, who were made from the petals of a rose and the twigs of a branch, placed their roots in the dirt to grow. And while the stars from the sky longed to return to the heavens above, they became the sun and the moon that took the darkness from the cave. When the seven souls crossed the unseen line at the mouth of the cave, they were hardly prepared for the rigors of the search. Challenged by the past, the donkey ox wanted to be the ruler of the land, while the turtle snail wanted only to rest by the sand. The rose petals, left without a thorny spine, longed for their prickly edge. And the stars, confined to the cave, wanted only to shine in the sky. Yet it wasn't until each soul had passed by the shadow of pride did it realize it was not alone. In the darkness, all was revealed. None of the seven souls wanted to admit to the others that they had come in search of the buried treasure. So for days they sat around and talked the nature's tongue about the worlds they had left behind. Finally, after tiring of telling lies, the souls of the rose petals told the others the truth about their lives. Once they lost their luster and fell to the ground, they only wanted to wither and die. The turtle snail, touched by the rose petal's truth, shared its feeling of shame about being locked inside a shell. Even the sun and the moon let their thoughts be known. While they stood there arguing about who was the first to claim the sky, they told of their dreams to light up the world. The donkey ox was the last to speak. At first he mumbled, and then he sighed before daring to admit how dumb and out of place he always felt because of his size. Once the seven souls had told all the lies and hidden truths they once had lived by, the floor beneath them opened up and revealed a flight of steps. With no question, or even the slightest hesitation, the stars from the sky went ahead to light the way. The others followed, and when the turtle snail took a tumble, the donkey ox went to his side. And just as the rose petals were about to make their descent, they decided to remain where it was safe. But all the while they tried to hold on tight, the gentle force of nature loosened their roots and pushed them down the flight of steps. Faced with uncertainty, the seven souls moved ahead. They hadn't traveled far before they came upon a white-winged bird sitting on a carved mahogany box. But before the seven souls could utter a word, the white-winged bird who had just sat before them disappeared in a cloud of smoke. Just as they were about to reach out and unlatch the lid, the white-winged bird reappeared and beckoned them to come near. Without a word, the seven souls obeyed. It was the turtle snail who spoke up first and asked the white-winged bird if they could look inside the mahogany box. "Never," said the white-winged bird to the seven souls, "will you ever again have to search for the buried treasure." It was then that the white-winged bird told the seven souls to close their eyes and push past the sight of their dreams to a place Donkey Ox. The Purple Mountain, he had hoped to cross. The turtle snail had to crawl out of the sand at the edge of the crystal waters of a protected cove. And the souls from the rose petals were forced to leave the field in which they had forever thrived, while the sun and the moon had to give up the sky. And when they had all journeyed to the place where their minds were clear, the white-winged bird presented each of them with the contents of the mahogany box. A master key, the color of gold that once had created the world. As the seven souls, one by one, were given a key of gold, it disappeared within their grasp and unlocked the door to their hearts. "Never again," said the white-winged bird to the seven souls, "will you ever have to search for the buried treasure." Taking a few minutes to reflect on that in whatever way you need to. And then if you want to do some journaling about that, or to do some drawing, or maybe some of you just want to think about it, sharing ideas, and this reflective mode is a much quieter one, and also a more vulnerable one in a way, because we're going into a different space, and interior space and more personal space. What kind of images? What? Anybody want to share what is evoked for them, or what they got in touch with through this story today?
I thought it was interesting how they had set out on their own independently, but it required them to find the people, required them to come together and be honest with each other, or vulnerable to a community. And then even after they had shared that and that ground open, they still need to each other to get to the box. Mm-hmm. Still, it was a continuing process of the community.
To me, vulnerability is the key word.
Vulnerability
and openness, risk-taking. To me, that opens up. Series of taking risks. Mm-hmm. Tearing your wits from the ground. Stars going into a cave. Wow, where is that?
Leaving home.
Yeah, leaving home.
Roots. Was that something that for you?
Oh yeah,
you got in touch with.
I just saw something in the bookstore that appealed to me, and I don't remember exactly how long ago. I'm a very concrete, sequential person, and I've worked with some very abstract, random people. And it's fun. I'm learning a lot. And the saying was something like, disorder leads to exciting discoveries. And I thought, wow, yeah. And I think if we open ourselves and make ourselves vulnerable, we take risks, then we're likely to find some exciting discoveries about ourselves, about other people.
But it means being vulnerable. And there's often some resistance.
If not being vulnerable, just being open to trying something new, which may or may not be vulnerable. It may not be a risk-taking thing, but just to be open to doing something which you wouldn't ordinarily do.
So there's some intentionality with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We make a choice of taking that risk, being open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think people sometimes think being open is it's a passive thing, you just sit there and take it in. I don't think so. I think it's a very intentional thing.
Alan Bozarth has a wonderful poem about waiting, and the last line is, to wait without waiting. And it's not a passive thing at all. It's very active. Any thoughts? How do people get in touch with them? Maybe too personal that you don't want to share, then that's all right too.
I have one more thing to
say. Okay.
And when they all came together and they were sort of revealing their dislikes about their characteristics, it seemed to work out because they knew what those were, those faults or those flaws that they didn't like. But I thought how hard it is to be on a journey when you don't understand yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a matter of risking or opening up, but if you can't find what that is to sort of fix that, then how do you go on? It's more murky. It's not just the vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where they were in the beginning, isn't it?
They all had to go through the dark hole.
That darkness. The darkness was the revealing aspect, and yet it was also the frightening.
They all had to face that and go through it.
Mm-hmm. In order to discover more about who they each were, as well as discover the community that Anne was talking about.
I thought the idea of the community was very wise, was a source of wisdom, because too often we may feel ourselves going through the dark hole, but only see ourselves on the other side. But this fable says that we must, that we have with us the other souls that help us, that color our lives and reveal more to us.
And sometimes we're not aware of that. We tend to forget that there are others there that may be sources of strength or support. Mm-hmm. That we're the only one that are somehow experiencing.
Our pride.
Mm-hmm.
I was confused in the story. I'm not quite sure what the symbolism and meaning of the various forms that the souls took. I didn't quite understand why the head of a horse and the body of an ox and all of that.
Did anybody else have ideas about that? Or didn't it make any difference?
I sure understand why it felt so awkward. Wasn't he or she the one who
right, the head of a donkey, the body of a donkey, and, you know.
He or she. Head of a donkey, the body of an ox.
Yeah, uh-huh.
The turtle and the head of the snail.
The snail.
The head of a turtle and the body of the snail.
The large and massive.
Mm-hmm. I interpret both of stubbornness in there too.
Stubbornness
in the people.
The The donkey, yes.
The use of strength and fruit.
What I liked was that when the donkey ass helped the turtle snail, I mean, you wouldn't think of that, those two animals being of assistance to each other. There's no symbiotic relationship, you know, like in your own atmosphere. And that appealed to them. Oh, they could do that. Yeah, they could do that.
So some very different, souls that wouldn't ordinarily be at home with each other.
Right.
Somehow.
And that too, the ability to, when you open yourself up, you open yourself up to the vulnerability of other people, but to their gifts as well, and how they can complement your vulnerability, compensate, or add to your gifts. Everybody wins.
Came up and you didn't get it
this time.
How the whole is much stronger and larger than the individuals. So,
yeah. Again, that sense of the community being a very important symbol.
I thought a bit about where you begin your journey from within. And the depth was, for me, you have to start the journey from within, and that journey is enhanced with your community. I think today, when Mark was talking about a vision that I really liked, a visual thing, he talked about sitting on the rim of something, that we all have our own destinies to face, to do alone, but that we can receive help from others, because they're all there too, and yet we are alone, but we are together.
So you found that same symbolism in the story.
Maybe it's because you are so good at kind of getting us all kind of settled down and speaking softly. But I think one of the things that struck me was, I think they sat around in that cave for a while. I don't think that they barreled through.
They had a bit of a struggle in there.
I'm not impatient necessarily with people, like, you know, oh, get this done or something, but sort of that sense of, let's get with the program. And it's hard to sort of recognize that sometimes these things don't come clearly in response to your comment that the people knew what their weakness, or the people, the souls knew what their weaknesses were. I'm not sure they did when they first arrived sitting there. I think it probably became clearer with time.
And in there.
And what they wanted probably became clearer with time, that the treasure at the end, they wouldn't have known what. They wouldn't have been able to do the task that the dove or whatever.
The white-winged.
The white-winged.
White-winged.
But had charged them with what they were.
If they hadn't.
If they hadn't somehow had this experience before. And I don't want that. I want to get right there and get this all solved.
Anybody else feel that? But let's get on with this. Were there people that just didn't like this at all and resisted even listening to the story? Or you don't have to acknowledge that if you do. But fables aren't for everybody. Or maybe it wasn't the day when you found yourself. kind of place that you wanted to listen to before.
What happened to the tree? It was mentioned at the beginning, and then it said how various souls did various things, but I don't recall that the tree was mentioned again specifically.
Oh, interesting observation. I don't think it was. It said that the three souls grew from the flowers and the trees. Mm-hmm. And we only heard about the flowers, didn't we?
Yeah.
The rose. Mm-hmm. I'll have to ask Barbara about that.
Well, I think I identify with the tree. I was sort of left out of the story.
Secondary importance to the flower.
What was that?
Well, they became, the trees became twigs. It became sort of secondary importance to the flower.
All right, that's a good observation. Because it did talk about the twigs, didn't it? Mm-hmm.
Does that mean the great shall become small and small?
Well, there's a variety of meaning that comes out of this. It's, you know, there isn't any right or wrong. That it's what connects for you and what images you see and what connections you make with your own experiences and your own dreams, your own hopes.
A good fable, then.
Because it's meant to evoke something for each of us that is different. Other thoughts about this? Any?
The major reaction I had to this was one of something that I think I've struggled with all my life, which is there's the people and there's me, and how can I have something to do with any of these people and still be me? And that's been a continuing struggle of mine. And it makes me aware that I can't, I don't want to live alone. I don't want to be alone in the world, and yet I don't want to have to give myself up either. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Well, and even the bigger question is, who is me? Who am I?
Once you find that out, you won't have to work.
Did you hear the song the other night? No. From singing? One of the most powerful songs she sang from the bottom of her heart. Who am I, Lord, that you name me by name? Beautiful song. Feeling in God's love that we are somebody important because He knows us. So when you ask yourself, who am I? You can say, well, I'm created by and loved by God. Each one of us.
Well, I'm sure of that, but it's then, that's the only reason I'm here today. I mean, who could live unless they didn't feel that home? Mm-hmm. But then you want to sort out what makes you unique and what makes you special.
Right.
What are your strengths? And
do you feel you're a different person to each person? Like in my family, I'm not to my husband what I am to my son. I'm not to my son, I am to the grandchild. I'm not what I am to my sister, to my brother. I'm a different person in a way to each person. I find myself sometimes baffled by who I am because I'm different roles.
I write letters differently to different people. You
speak differently because you're related to who that person is.
Right.
So we're multi-faceted people.
We may be ourselves as the only one who know who we really are, you know. But we become different because of the needs of other people.
I think only God knows who we are.
And sometimes that is spoken of as bad, that we change with who we react to. And I don't think so at all. It's
difficult, though.
Oh, it is.
Those are phrases.
It gets wary.
It's difficult to design the plane while you're flying it. Because you're always in this creative tension, you speak of with other people.
That's why I turn the radio off while I'm driving in the car, so I can have some quiet.
Well, that's a whole question that would take a whole other session.
Maybe more.
Maybe more. Maybe a lifetime.
One of the things that, that occurred to me also is that in relation to something like this is my wife and I had a retreat with some confirmation-age children for a weekend. And we did a lot of things and interesting stuff and all that. One of our biggest problems was, even before we got on the tree, how much control are we going to have? That sort of thing. But we really got involved with them, and they seemed to get involved with each other and with us to some extent too. But to the point where we asked them about themselves. And if they would, we've gotten pretty personal in different ways. And they all wrote, we asked them to write something, a poem on their family. After all, the family's the most important thing in terms of the sort of thing we're talking about. And they all started off with the same thing, my family is, and so on. And it's just remarkable, the tremendous insight. And I brought some of that with me. Boy, I wish I could share it. It's like, my family is like a deck of cards. Mother is the ace. and just identifies each person like that. And my family is an ocean. My family is... my family is an ocean. My family is a belt. My father is the strap. Some of these are very exciting, and some of them are very sad about where they. And then there was one kid who talked about, the ocean one, where he says everybody gets mad at him and. Does bad things, but they, even if he does bad things, they all take him back.
And the emotions that those said, just in
three or four or five sentences is all they,
Right, how would he focus?
It was so intense and so natural. It did tend to bring the whole group much closer together because we're all share the same problem,
we're all right.
Start off the same. So that was very important.
Do we stay the same? I feel like I just figure out what's going on in here, and then, it changes. It changes physically, it changes emotionally, it changes, and it makes me crazy, I'm hunting around and figuring out where I fit in here, and the next year I come up and I'm not who I was before.
You're doing great. You're doing great, I'm serious. What I've tended to tell people is that the only way to live is, to really live is you have to learn how to go crazy in this world, and to find somebody to go crazy with. And that's the healthiest thing you can do.
Well, when you talked about disorder leading to exciting new discoveries, it reminded me of a new interest of mine. And maybe we have to turn this off for the tape.
It's been an hour, so
cut out the middle.
The session is over, and we're having a few comments after the session. The whole chaos theory that I know just teeny weeny about, but it's so exciting, and I want to learn more about it. the whole idea of fractals. Fractals, did you know about them?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're exciting, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you talked about, the disorder of chaos, the unpredictability that produces new patterns that have an order of their own. So it's kind of exciting new discoveries in the midst of the unpredictability and chaos. And I've got this wonderful big book about the fractal patterns of nature and the body and just every place. Any last words before we call this to a close? I appreciate your coming and your sharing, and hope that maybe this will continue to evoke some images and thoughts for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.